Reality, a podcast that combines lived experience with the scientific knowledge of burnout to help listeners prevent, recover, and grow from burnout. My name is Shannon Swales, a human and clinical psychologist with both lived experience and scientific knowledge and skills in burnout. It is my hope that the values of authenticity, compassion, wisdom, and community shine through in each and every episode of the pod. Episodes that share my own and others' lived experiences of burnout, and interviews expert guests to help listeners build awareness and hope to prevent, recover, and grow from burnout. The views, opinions, tips, and the like expressed by myself or my guests are not a replacement of personalized therapy. Just like I have done for myself and many of my guests, I encourage those of you that are suffering to seek professional help. This episode brings you another brave soul's story of burnout. Edwina's experience will be a particular benefit for writers, creators, teachers, those who are going through menopause or perimenopause, mothers of teenagers, the neurodiverse, the grievers, women, and those who are going through relationship struggles within or breakups within their burnout. It is amazing how much wisdom can be packed into just over an hour conversation together, but this definitely has it, and you will not want to miss this episode. I am very privileged and love what I do. To bear witness to such vulnerability is amazing, and I particularly love doing the lived experience episodes. And my wish for you is that you get as much out of this conversation I had with Edwina about her burnout experience as I did. But even if you get 10% of that, it will be a lot. So please stay tuned. And thanks so much, Edwina, for your generosity.
Hi, Edwina, and welcome to the pod. It's absolutely fantastic to have you here, and I really appreciate you, your willingness to come on and share your burnout experience so other people can vicariously through you, feel supported and heard and validated. So yeah, welcome to the show.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Shannon.
You're welcome. So to kick things off, I was wondering if you could share what life was like around or before the burnout, filling us in with, what you were doing.
Well, thinking about doing this podcast, I was thinking, actually I've burned out quite a few times in my life. And just recently I thought, I'm teetering very close. And luckily I've just had a holiday, so I'm back good now. But I want to talk about the really big one that happened. And that was in my perimenopausal years. So it's actually one of my projects that I'm working on now to write, that's called 49 is a Dangerous Age. So anybody who's out there listening and is around 49 and hitting that crazy perimenopause bit, I was, 20 years into motherhood, all unpaid, full-time, no holiday work, no holiday, no rest ever, and also working as a writer and a teacher of writing and in the community, and writing my books as well, and married. And first of all, a book that I'd been working very, very hard on, my life's work, had been rejected. It got very, very close and then got rejected. So that area of my life was like I'd put my heart and soul into and had this big rejection. So any other writers out there as well, or other artists facing that rejection and your work not coming to full fruition at that time. And then with motherhood as well, my kids were teenagers. I wasn't getting all of that lovey-dovey stuff that you get with the little kids anymore. It was all, rolling your eyes and becoming the mum joke. And then my partner at the time was putting pressure on me to stop writing and go back to a proper job. So I'd been working, of course, all the way through my children's childhoods, as well as being a full-time mum. I'd been working part-time, teaching English, teaching creative writing. I got my master's in creative writing. I'd written a book and been published and written several others. but he was really wanting me to go and get a proper job. So I thought, okay, my last proper job that I had done, I'm a trained special needs teacher, so I'd worked in special schools. Because of my background as a naughty kid, I had also specialised in behaviour disorders. So, but I had not been in that workforce, doing that work, for over 20 years. So I went back and I got a job in a behaviour disorder classroom, but it was not within a school that was set up for behaviour disorder. All of those kids had really big problems, as well as it was an English language school. So a lot of their classes were just, you know, easy teaching English. But they gave me a class of 12 kids who had gone through the Australian primary system but had not been able to pick up language. So they already had some kind of a learning or intellectual disability. A lot of them had behavior, serious behavior disorder problems, and I was in there most of the time also without any support or teacher aid. So my first day after teaching that class, which was, it was almost impossible to teach, mainly I was separating people from fighting violently, and you know, the only English they spoke were abusive curses to each other and, you know, racist. It was just horrific, and these were kids of people who'd been in refugee camps and so on. So there was a lot of trauma in the room, and a very sensitive person, and I was already, I had my practices all set up, you know. I was doing a daily yoga practice. I was doing a daily journaling. But that day, walking home, so school finished at 3. I was out of the classroom by maybe 3:30, quarter to 4. And I went for a walk along the river because nature is always my go-to place as well. And that first day, I was crying because the stress was so overwhelming. Now, apparently a normal person then would have gone back and said, I'm sorry, I can't do this job. But I just thought, well, that's just me. I'm such a sissy. It must be, you know, me that can't cope. And I've only got, I had a 3-week contract with this class. If I can just get past this 3 weeks with this class, then I can move on to one of the much easier classes there and get a little part-time English teaching job. And that will keep my husband happy, because I thought my writing career had hit.
Suffered that huge rejection.
One of gazillions, but it was a big one. So I got home and I did my practices that usually help. I did my pages. I was trying to sort it out. But I also had to prepare lessons for the next day. And so I was up really late. And, of course, when you're stressed, what do? You turn to those old bad habits that aren't actually helpful, but we think they are. Oh, I'll have a glass of wine, then I'll be able to relax. So I just have a glass of wine, but, you know, I didn't go the whole hog. I didn't have a whole bottle. I just would have a glass. But, of course, my body does not like that, so that did not help as well. So the next day I go in, and it's even worse. I get an hour off when a man maths teacher comes in and teaches them maths, and he comes out of that 1 hour going, I don't know how you can cope with that. And I just keep ploughing through. And, of course, every day I'm crying. At the end of that first week, I'm standing outside the classroom before I'm going in, girding my loins. Okay, and I had all this stuff that I wanted to show them for like morning talk. You know, here's a picture of the smallest bird in the world, and here's a little bird's nest I found. And I saw the kids fighting and carrying on even before we get into the classroom. And I just put all that stuff to the bottom of my bag because I thought that they would destroy my precious things. So that's when I thought, oh gosh, I think I probably am not going to make this 3 weeks. And I went, you know, I was doing the right thing. I was 49. I was an experienced professional person. Mm-hmm. I went to talk to the head teacher and saying, I'm finding this extremely difficult. Mind you, their most experienced teachers had not had the full time in that classroom. They broke it into 2.5 days each in that classroom, yet they put me in there 5 days. Mm-hmm. So it was managed, and I did not get any better support. Sometimes I got an African teacher aide, a man who came in, who was extremely helpful with mm-hmm. a lot of boys' behaviour, mm-hmm. but the behaviour was extreme.
Yeah.
And when you start getting that stressed, my practices, which I'd had in place for 20 years, mm-hmm. started falling away.
Okay.
So I don't have time to write my 3 pages every morning. I'll just write mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. And I don't have time to do my full yoga practice. I can only do my 30-minute version. Mm-hmm. Very long practice. Yeah. But so those were falling away. By the end of the second week, I was a wreck.
Yeah.
And I went in there and those kids were out of control on that last day. Mm. I felt this like angry goddess energy rising up inside me and I roared at them.
Yeah.
And they were quiet. One of them actually said, "See, miss, you just have to yell." It's like, I couldn't speak for days after that. I'd completely destroyed my voice box.
Yeah.
So I ended up taking some sick leave. I tried to go back in the next week and I made it through the day.
Yeah.
But I couldn't. And then I came home and I was crying for weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, what happens in perimenopause that is not often spoken about is that all your emotional stuff comes up as well. Not just the change. It's a lot like adolescence, like, you know, all the emotional and intellectual turmoil that goes on for a teenager, especially as a highly sensitive person, and I identify as being on the autism spectrum as well. But that's certainly happened again in perimenopause.
Yeah.
And all I've been doing my practice, I'd written my book on grief, I'd written my book on healing the loss of my brother and so on, but it all came back and I was crawling along the floor, unable to stop crying. My partner did not know what to do. His advice was, I was writing in my journal, which, as we know, is a fantastic tool.
Yeah.
Crying as I was doing it because I was so upset and broken.
Yeah.
And he said, I've been meaning to tell you, I think you should stop writing. And I thought, click. That's it. He obviously doesn't understand who I am. So this whole, sometimes we're thrown into these dark and deeply uncomfortable places so that we're forced to grow. Because I was in a comfortably uncomfortable and very boring and undervalued and underappreciated rut. If I had not had this total breakdown and out, I may still have been in there. So I heard something great the other day about, you know, crabs and all those mollusks who outgrow their shells. They only leave their shells and grow because they get too uncomfortable. So we actually need that discomfort to say, I'm out of here. And find a bigger shell.
Yeah, that's amazing. I did not know that, and that's really cool. And it sounds like for you, Edwina, because I know with people's burnout experiences or, you know, breakdowns or however we describe it, that we don't necessarily see that treasure in that breakdown till, you know, sometimes much later or sometimes never. But it sounds like you certainly did. But wait, at what time did you kind of notice that, or is that something that you learned later on, that there was growth in what you went through there?
Well, unfortunately, because of most of my life experiences, I knew that growth came from suffering.
Yeah, you'd already been there.
Maybe that's why we have it, as well as to make us realize when things are good and appreciate it. Yeah. But it was, so I had beautiful, luckily I have beautiful friends who I've known since my childhood, and female friends. And they were instrumental in my healing during this time. Pick me up from the floor and take me out to the rainforest and take me for a walk and so on, that great power of nature. And one of my friends had moved over to Western Australia and she offered that I could go and stay with her for 3 weeks. So I had some money that was actually my own for the first time, because everything else had been that I'd earned had always gone into the family. I did not have my own bank account. Don't ever do that, everybody. I was an idiot. Always had bank account. I took some of that money and went over and stayed with her, and she basically nursed me back to health. Where my whole body, everything was gone.
Yeah, you had that complete. They often talk about in the burnout stuff that there's these different levels, and there's one that where the body completely shuts down. There's a technical name for it. Not great with technical names, but it's what you the body shuts down, literally cannot move, or you know, move or move very slowly. If we
certainly couldn't function very well at all. I could barely think a straight sentence. I really, really needed to get over there and have somebody look after me, and you know, those warm foods as well. They're so important. Important when you're in recovery, warm soupy stews, orange vegetables. Also, I went on ashwagandha, which wasn't really known as it is now, but it's a wonderful nerve tonic that is wonderful. I love it. And just that being looked after, you know, being massaged.
Yeah. Because if we can just like rewind a little bit, I mean, the recovery stuff, certainly want to, you know, delve into that and explore what really supported you coming through that time. But yeah, just rewinding to those elements that led to your burnout, that breakdown, the complete shutdown. There were so many stresses in your life at the time. Like, I mean, of course, the work situation, you know, with working with these severely traumatized kids that were very violent and outwardly. But not just like you mentioned there, when you did go to your management, you know, you went to get help, there wasn't that support back. And there wasn't, and you were, your workload, no one else was doing 5 days a week in that class.
Not with that class.
So that mismanagement and absolutely wrongly placed, because, you know, burnout, like as I heard your story, I was like, oh my God, no wonder. Like all these things that we know are classic, and not getting the support from your I'm gathering ex, in terms of really understanding you and your needs. You're a writer, you not only you write, you know, but you write for your healing and growth as well, and just not getting that. And I just there's so many kind of those precursors or the triggers.
Well, it all came in together. That's why I'm writing a book about that year. You know, 49 is a very dangerous age.
And the perimenopause. Yes, that too.
Perimenopause as well, because I think looking back now, I probably had endometriosis, but nothing was ever diagnosed properly, because I had every 3 weeks, I had a week of intense pain. So dealing with that on top of everything else as well, it's like, really, you need a break. Somebody give, you know, there's no long service leave for motherhood, but once I did break away and was healthy, I took my own long service leave and went off overseas and had a great holiday.
But there's so many, I can see so many things there that contributed to, you know, where your emotional, mental and physical health went there. I was wondering for you, like, what was there a particular point in which you went, like what were the factors that kind of you said you noticed, okay, I'm not doing okay, like this is
the day I roared and my voice went away, because that's what, and that's what I've learned this year too, since identifying as on the autistic spectrum, is that autistic people, we will keep pushing ourselves and pushing ourselves beyond what neurotypical people will. I just thought that I was being sooky. But so it often takes my body collapsing on me, like me having no voice. How can I even attempt to teach? I can't speak. You know, so my body was saying, pulling the rug out from under me, saying, do not go back in there. Do not go back in there.
Like it took your body to speak for you to let you know. So that was, and that was actually interesting enough with my experience, because my, I had the full body collapse as well. And it, I knew something was not okay prior to that, but I kept, I made some changes. I did make some changes, but they weren't enough. And then kept at it. But it was the body that spoke. I often say that the body spoke for me. She said,
The body will, the body will. Yeah. If you, and if, listen to the first little niggle, don't wait until they go, okay, I told you and I told you and I told you. Now you're not going to move for 3 weeks. Like, you know,
I mean, you've been through it too, and as you said, I think already, or said off air too, that you've had, you know, had burnout a couple of times. What are those early signs that, like, prior to the body kind of screaming as it did for you in this big one?
Well,
what are those early signs?
Crying. Crying after a day at work is a big sign.
Yeah, I hear you.
Feeling like you have to gird your loins, that you have to put your armor on before going into work. If you have to do that, that work is not for you.
I hear
you. For me also, if I start having that glass of wine in the evenings, okay, it's Friday, you can have a glass of wine. But if you're having, you know, your drug of choice daily, that's a bad sign. No. That means that, you know, things are getting too stressful. For me too, if I'm not doing my practices.
Yes.
If they're starting to drop off. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know, ooh, something's going to give here.
That was really interesting, Edwina, as you shared that, because, yeah, really wonderful resources to support your well-being that you're very engaged in. And sometimes I know people say that. They're like, oh, I've got really great resources. I do a lot of things, but yet I still wind up here. Yeah. And but what you just said, like they start to whittle away when those demands of the work, you know, pile up and you're trying to meet those demands. And if you're someone, like you said, like with neurodiversity, sort of push through that and don't stop to look after this, like, or to, you know, just keep, that sort
and
of.
I asked for help once, but when that wasn't forthcoming, I thought, well, they just think I'm awful and that I'm useless, so I'll try and do it myself. And there was a lovely art teacher there, and whenever she knew what I was going through, but all I, you know, she would try and offer support. All I could do was cry every time she came near me. I knew she understood.
Beautiful. Like, when you find that compassionate other, like, and what I mean by that, they are present with your emotions. Your body just feels okay to let it go, right? That was my supervisor. She, our supervision sessions were just full of me crying most of the time.
I think that's what burnout is. We've reached a point where we can't cope. We can't be grown ups. We just have to be crying babies for a while. And I was so lucky that I had my friend that I could go to who let me be that baby.
Actually, before we move on to like that support that you got and what really helped you move through that and beyond the burnout, the breakdown, how would you describe, you know, we hear the technical terms of burnout and what it is, but how would you describe it, like, if you had to define it?
I think it's the inability to cope with life. You keep pushing and you keep pushing and you keep pushing until, well, in our case, our bodies collapse and our, you know, I think with you too, after having a look at your book, you know, you fall into this well of despair. Yeah. It's not just anxiety or social anxiety or feeling judged or whatever. It's I am useless. Your self-esteem goes right to zero. You're so depressed, you'd rather be dead than get up and do that job again. Mm. How can you be of service to anybody because you are so useless?
Hopelessness.
And even, you know, I'd fought my way out of very dark holes several times, and I knew I was a strong woman, but just with the perimenopause, with the devaluing from my ex and the children as well,
the workplace, they didn't, you know,
and because when I went in, I said, look, I have not been in one of these classrooms for 20 years, I'm going to need support. And she said, oh, you look plenty resilient to me. And I said, yeah. And then I go to her for help and I don't get any, like,
just resilient, you look resilient. Okay, look resilient, what is that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm strong looking. I present very happy, you know, and I am generally very happy, except when I'm broken down. So, and the body as well.
Yeah.
A lot of us, it tends to, when you reach that point where you have pushed yourself and pushed yourself against every impulse in your body to keep going, then your body will shut you up. Yeah.
I like your description of burnout as that inability to cope with life, because the more and more I delve into it, you know, outside my own experience of it, other people's experience of it, reading up on other people, it's just like it comes from all corners of the earth. It's not just from work. Yeah. It's all those things that you just mentioned, and for other people, other things. But it's the inability to cope with that chronic pounding of stress that just comes at us, you know, from all those different angles. It's life. It's, take the work name out of it, it's life, you know, which involves work.
Yes.
Basically. But unpaid work as well, and all the other
things. That's right. All the different aspects of our life all of a sudden become too much. Yeah. It's overwhelming and, I mean, I was literally crawling on the ground.
You were, you started to share already those steps, those things that started helping you step out of recovery, and it really sounded like it started with being cared for by others. Yeah. So, tell me a little bit more about that, because that is such an essential part, being cared for by others, I think.
I mean, I know you went and you had counsellors and psychologists and so on. That's never been my way. My way has always been with my friends. Mm. So it was my friends who came and, you know, took me to the nature and talked to me and tried to help me remember that I was strong and so on. But it was actually the babying of me by my friend Bella over in Western Australia, just having permission to sleep for 13 hours a day. Just sleep and sleep and sleep, and then get up, and she'd have made me a meal, and instead of me having to, because I was still the chief cook and bottle washer at home, even though I was doing this work, and up till midnight, you know, usually I go to bed at 9 o'clock. Preparing and so on, and I had asked my teenage children and my then partner as well, please, you know, I'm very stressed, I need your help, can somebody please cook the meals or help me, or how about we have a roster or something? And you know, all I got was, we can all see you're stressed, Mum.
again, asking for help from your systems, your family system. I mean, you asked for help from your work system, they didn't. Oh, you're resilient. Uh-huh, you look resilient. From your family as well. So it's not for want of asking for it. You did. Yeah. I need help.
I think when you mostly present as extremely capable, and when you are mostly extremely capable, people are just used to you doing everything.
Yeah.
And they think, oh, well, what's the matter with her? It's like, well, I'm like this because I'm about to explode or implode.
That was something, I identify as a lesson for me, that I presented that way all the time. And it was something that I did have control over. Like, I chose to be really quite independent and do everything myself. And it was something I then chose, because it was something within my realm, to learn to be the interdependent. That it was okay. I mean, I was raised to be a strong, independent woman, which I'm grateful for. And at the same time, I am now grateful for learning how to lean on and be cared for by others as an ongoing thing, not just when I'm like absolutely down in the depths of despair. But it's something that I have been able to change and do. I'm still working on it. Yes. I feel very, very
working on everything too. And apparently, it keeps going.
Yeah, but thank God for your friend system. That's a system that you can rely on and be cared for and looked after. And this, and they jumped and they were there for you. But yeah, how did that all come about?
Well, I just was in such a bad way. Somebody rang up the phone, rang, and all I could do was blubber. And
they came.
Yeah, and they came, and then I was enough together that I could get the ticket to get over to WA and just take time out from my family as well, and to get perspective on what was going on for my whole life, not just this one work situation. Yeah. But I did make a decision at that time that I would never again work in a school system or any type of system like that. Well, I'm very lucky. My friend is a Chinese medicine practitioner and a herbalist and so on. So I was, I had the very best of care. and just that lovely nurturing sort of mothering that you really, I think, you need when, especially when we burn out to that extent where we have, burnt every bridge that we feel we have, and our bodies have gone as well. We really just need to, do the health farm experience where we are, just really looked after. And I had 3 weeks over there sleeping and being looked after and, fed medicine, food as medicine.
You said the food as well,
The lovely warm
nutrients.
Yes, and getting massages and acupuncture and just remembering who I was as well after 200 years.
Felt like that maybe.
I mean, I love my children dearly, but, having kids is a big job, and I took that job very seriously. And it was not nice having all of that work devalued and negated and by being made the mum joke. So if anybody out there is being made a mum joke, you stick up for yourself, because that sucks. You know how much work you've done. so just getting that 3 weeks of renewal, remembering who I was and getting my physical health back on track. Yeah. I then was able to return and set some more boundaries and so on with my family.
Yeah.
Very clear that I would never go back to teaching again. Mm-hmm. It was really the beginning. It was a 2-year journey of recovery to become fully healed from that. And it was really the beginning of breaking up with my then husband, which has been great, and sorry, darling. We had a good time. We were good parents together and we had many good years, but I'm certainly very glad that now I am glad I can look back that this whole incident and around this time was so important, because I wouldn't be where I am now, happily writing and teaching others to write and traveling and with my own home where I'm very comfortable and happy where I am in my life now without that burnout experience having happened.
So it's been a real growth oriented experience.
I mean, we don't like it. I hate that saying, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But
some truth to it. But still, it's like you said, 2 years though, you had that 3-week intensive there that was really giving back to your physical body, permission to rest, really getting some time away and some care and some mothering. But then 2 years from there, coming back, setting some really strong boundaries, and anyone who's done boundaries work, we know it's not just setting them, but resetting them, continuing, yes, putting them up. It's hard when we're doing that with other people who are used to one way. So could you, I suppose, you know, elaborate a little bit on that 2 years? Because I think this is the thing that a lot of people often don't understand. The people who live burnout understand it or get to understand how long it takes to really recover from it. But a lot of other people don't understand how debilitating and how long it really takes to fully recover. So, yeah, I just want a bit more, you know, insight to share around that 2 years and what you did. And
well, I think a whole lot of it too was about the relationship issue. And, you know, I knew that my partner and I were no longer working, but there was no other room in the house for me to move to. I still had kids in high school, and other mothers out there will relate to, we just want to make sure that our kids get through all okay. Again, it comes down to motherhood. Somehow you've end up at the bottom of your own priority list after everybody else's agendas and so on. So it took me 2 years even to just be able to move into a bedroom of my own. That kind of stuff. Just that rebuilding of self. Who am I? That rebuilding of me as a writer, trying to find my way back after I'd gotten so close and then fallen at the last hurdle, which had happened a few times before, but this project was one that is still very close to my heart and still looking for a good home. And it will find a good home. I'm close now, and if it doesn't, I'll just independently publish. That rebuilding of self, and really, because most of my life's lessons have been through traumatic losses, which is why I've written the book on grief. Really, this was a loss of my marriage, a loss of that mother of small children phase of your life. It was the beginning of the nest. And loss of myself in, I suppose it was in my vision of myself as somebody who could go out and do a normal job. That, because then I thought, and that really is quite was quite difficult for my self-esteem to think that I can't do this. And really, every other job I've taught as well. I mean, I can do my job. I'm an excellent teacher. And I'll throw at myself at it 150%. But I'll burn out. And I'll burn out usually within a year. This was just, and I think if I'd gone into an easier classroom, if I'd gone into one of those easy, just, you know, everybody's healthy and happy and I just have to teach them English, I might have stayed there. I might have been stayed stuck in my, you know, comfortably uncomfortable little shell there. But the universe threw me into this very worst case scenario where even, you know, I've worked in behavior disorder classrooms. If kids are as bad as those children were, their behaviors, you only have two or three kids in a room and you have a teacher aide per kid. You don't have 12 of them and you. So it was the system as well. But it was, I was sent in there to really learn my lesson fast. And now, of course, I see that, why does anybody work like that? Working 5 days a week, to the expense, at the expense of the rest of your life and your own mental and physical and emotional and spiritual well-being, is not in anyone's best interests.
No, I agree.
And I'm actually really happy and proud of the way that I've been able to, you know, I'm paying a mortgage my own way, working from home, doing my editing, running retreats, empowering others, working in community organizations, and working at the university. But I just go in, I like to call it my special guesting. So some of us are just made to be special guests.
What great insight there. I just, you know, that it was about rebuilding yourself, and there were so many losses that you were faced with and dealing with, including that loss of what you said there of that the way you thought you needed to work, you know, and or career wise, and and now where you are and how you've built that, and you are able to, you know, roof over your head, pay a mortgage, all that kind of stuff, travel, and, you know, and working in a way that sounds like is you, you know, that rebuilding of self that you mentioned and is you. But that takes time. I mean, God, building ourselves and working through losses, Jesus, you know.
It takes a long time. And I still have to watch myself. Last year I was, because I do a lot of work with people who have suffered severe trauma as children, forgotten Australians who suffered institutional and out-of-home abuse of every form as children, the most horrific abuse you can imagine. And I was helping them write life stories. And I did about 8 of those life stories within 6 months. Oh. And some of those stories were so horrific, so harrowing that it influenced the way I looked at anybody. And I could feel myself getting to that point again, but now at least I seem to be able to realize, okay, I'm running very close now. I have to be very, very quiet. I mean, most people, when they come on my retreats or go to a workshop or in one of my classes, I present as quite extrovert, and I am when I'm in the teacher role, but then I come home and I don't talk to anyone for 3 days, and I like it like that.
I'm the same, and people hear me say I'm an introvert or more introvert. I get my energy from being on my own, and they go, "What?" Because I can certainly be quite extroverted amongst people, and certainly go up to people and say, "Hey," but it takes a lot of energy. But it sounds like you said now you know yourself, a lot. I mean, and you can recognize some of those signs earlier on that you need. What you need to rejuvenate, to restore,
and I think I've reached now the point where I go, okay, I'm feeling like I could be heading for a burnout. I'm going to say no. I can't do that next harrowing life story right now. Right now, I need 3 weeks of just real quiet. I think that's what it is about. And as we get older, it gets easier, is to recognize those early signs. So if a whole week goes by and I've only done my 30-minute asana practice rather than my hour and a half asana practice, then I'll go, okay, that's not good. Why haven't I done that? Or, I skipped my morning pages 3 times this week. What's going on? Then pulling away, and now because I live alone as well, it's very easy for me to go into my much more comfortable shell.
That's true. Like living in, having kids, especially teenage kids, as you did back then, and a husband as well. Like not having that space for yourself that was and is needed, for yourself.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because I shared a bedroom with my husband too, there was nowhere for me to just be in my own energy. So my writing space was a corner of the lounge room. I shared a bedroom. So my time to myself was out on walks in the morning or on my yoga mat. But that was usually with people walking around me or, taking photos. Looking funny because they were teenagers.
And that was the thing. I know, I'm sort of skipping back, but I didn't mention back, one of those precursors or whatever language we want to use of burnout too is when we feel devalued, wherever that devaluing is coming from, or just take away burnout, just mental health wise, if we're in systems that we feel constantly, obviously every now and again, may not hurt us, but constantly devalued, it can, erode in a lot of ways,
And I think it was mainly happening in my relationship and then that was reflected also in my teenage kids, but also it was happening in my professional life with my books getting rejected.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. It was multiple. And I mean, with teenagers, we know, I'm not a mom, but I understand that there, through teenagehood, that there tends to be that So they start to separate, and there can be, you know, certainly some behavior that comes out there that's not quite lovely towards the, yeah. the
I mean,
parent.
My kids were really pretty good. It was just that feeling of, how have I gone from beloved mummy yeah. with these constant companions? So imagine coming home to your dogs and the dogs rolling their eyes at you going, oh, it's her, and that'd walking in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
yeah That's no, not fun. no, I couldn't imagine that in relation. But like you said, your books, you know, which was you know, yeah. so important to you. I mean, that's how I haven't mentioned yet, but that's how I got to meet you. Is when I was out there looking for an editor and found well, actually, a mutual friend of ours recommended you, and that's how I found you. And your books, writing, you know, your whole career, your life is around that too.
Yes,
and you're very good at what you do. you made the process so lovely. You know, in terms of handing over your manuscript and having it read, it was great.
Well, I understand what it's like to be rejected.
Exactly. That's why I'm like, oh, you're so awesome in that way. But yeah, but this is your like, it's I can see the passion in working with you in what you do. So to have had yes. that devalued and from such an important piece that you wrote, and you know, because that was your grief. That's your grief book, right? Is that
it's a book that's out now. It's currently under the title Shadow Man, or Dear Madman is my preferred title. It's about the murder of my nana's sister as an 11-year-old in the turn of the 20th century.
Actually, I think I remember you sharing that with me, that yeah, bits of that story. Wow. It sounds like you've always, because you mentioned the work that you do with, you know, with the kids, with adults, sorry, they're adults now, but they've been suffered, you know, horrific abuses, that you're helping them write their stories as well, like your stories that you write as well as help others write are these really like lived experiences.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's what I'm drawn to. I'm a gritty realist, and I first started writing. So writing is a fabulous tool for healing. Yeah. My father died when I was very young after a long and ugly battle with cancer, and left my mother a widow. She was only 38 with 5 kids. Then my brother, my closest sibling, 16 months apart, my brother Matty developed schizophrenia at about 15, 16, and very seriously ill and trying to kill himself multiple times until he finally succeeded at 20. So the stories that were in my head had to get out, and I found writing them out and then fictionalizing them, changing the endings, changing my character in there. That is very empowering. It's a great way to retell your story and reframe it and create. So there's great benefit in just writing out the shit that's going on in your life or the traumatic experiences of your life exactly as they happened, reliving them, releasing them. Yeah. But for me, the greatest healing came in then creating a work of art from that pain, the work, the reworking, the fictionalizing, the changing things, the focus on the sentences to make them beautiful, making something beautiful from all that pain really helped to heal a lot of the trauma around certainly my brother's illness and death.
Edwina, my memory's being jogged as you shared that framework of writing with healing, with reframing it, that and memory of learning a particular therapeutic approach that uses that within it, but I can't quite grasp where it came from. But regardless of that, that is something that you've used, you've helped, like taught as well, and seen help other people.
Yes. I use it a lot because the forgotten Australians, the people who suffered the institutional abuse. I've taught them creative writing for over 7 years now. So we do a lot of this stuff. And for most of them now, there's no use just repeating the same old sad story. That's just ingraining it, but finding a way. So we do fun things like, you know, if you could go back and you had superpowers, you know, what would you do, you know? And, you know, a lot of it's just getting a genie to stick a great big rocket up somebody's bottom and sending them up into space to explode. But, you know, that's safe. That's a safe.
It's a safe. And it adds just a different. I can see, yeah. Thank you for sharing that part of your life. I feel like I may have gone off tangents, but it's
well,
such
I
a
think people doing we're dealing with burnout, it can be a useful tool for you too. So not just writing about the emotions that you're going through, but also maybe writing yourself a new future. You know, envisioning yourself, where do you want to be in 5 years? So I'm now 7 years out from my last really big burnout, and I could not even, I don't think, have imagined it. I mean, I did a lot of sort of collaging of my dream house, but my dream house, the house that I have now, is even better than that. So, but that's a nice thing to do. Right. About where you want to go. If everything was perfect, what would I be doing? Where would I be? What would my life look like if I didn't have to do a normal job?
Because that's a, like, I loved hearing that part of your story too, because I've ditched that. Like, I used to think, you know, the 9 to 5, or, you know, working 40 hours a week, let's face it. Fitting that part of society and the norm and the expectation there, but that was killing me. Like, it honestly was, and it was not lifting me up. And so crafting at some point in my recovery, starting to craft a new way and being okay with that, because it's certainly dropping that, I held on to the belief that I should, you know, that's what you should do, you know. And
yes, well, everybody else seems to be able to do it. Why can't I do it?
And I was like, at some point, like, it was a lot of processing, but at some point, and I still at times, but then I go, well, how am I feeling? You know, where's my well-being at? Well, it's a hell of a lot better, and I'm a lot more, it's working, basically, how I'm living now. It's still crafting, but I love that. Like, thank you. That's, crafting. I mean, I'm using the word crafting, but developing, exploring, creating, you know, a new world, a new way in which you do things. And envisioning that and creating that, that's what it could look like for people going through burnout, to create a new story. And even like
create a new story for them, for yourself. And, you know, a whole lot of it is just, we think that we have to do that, that everybody else is doing that, but everybody else isn't doing that. There's a whole lot of us, sensitive, artistic, creative, people, neurodiverse often, who are finding other ways that is much better. And, you know, a lot of the money that people earn when they are doing these jobs, they spend on stuff so that they can keep doing that. They have to have their bottle of fancy champagne at the end of the week because that's their reward for getting through that. Or they have to, you know, have their posh resort 1 week off or whatever. Or you have to be able to get takeaway every night because you're too exhausted to cook. No, just manage living on a lower income, eat more lentils. And there's ways around everything. We don't have to do that. I don't think it's healthy for anybody.
No, I'm with you too. I don't think it's healthy for anybody either. And there's ways, you can manage, and it's not till you've kind of, well, in my situation, forced to, and then you're like, with no money. I'm certainly in a privileged position to have a partner who was able to float us, but it still meant changes, and changes that have continued, because it's like, we can live on lower. You don't need, don't need more, you know. It is
No. And a whole lot of the money, when we're earning money, a whole lot of it just goes to helping us get back to work on Monday again.
It was funny. One of the things, and actually I've spoken to a couple other people who experience those musculoskeletal pains up in the neck, and headaches and shoulder pain, who were experiencing that for a long time before the precipice, like before their burnout, like, was so bad that they stopped work. And that pain went away. And they were spending so much on physios, and I was too. I was spending money. And she was great. My remedial masseuse, she kept putting my body back in there. And then when I stopped working and I couldn't afford remedial massage anymore, I didn't actually need it.
Yeah, that's right.
I do a lot of stretching and other things that don't cost any money.
Well, we can still treat ourselves, you know, once a month, but we don't need it once a week.
No, or... I was doing it fortnightly.
Yeah.
I mean, she was, you know, I mean, she was brilliant. I thought that was therapy in itself. But yeah.
I love massage. Yeah.
I even remember.
So every Friday afternoon when I was doing that job that broke me, I went to this. It was just a poor Chinese girl, but she was great. And I would cry on the table for the whole hour and she just soothed me.
Oh, that body touch, right? It's such an important thing for our body. Yeah. Hey, I mean, such diversity, such richness, such beauty, but in the pain that through what you've shared about your burnout breakdown experience and what helped and what transpired through that whole recovery period and growth period, really, to where you are today. I just wonder if there's any last words that you want to share. You shared so much, but anything that you want to impart to the listeners, maybe any lasting wisdoms, before we finish up today.
Well, I think just if you're in the midst of burnout right now, stop it. Stop working. Just take the time out. Everything will miraculously be taken care of. Sometimes when we're pushing and forcing ourselves, we're just making things worse. Oftentimes in my life, usually it's my body has pulled the rug out from under me, but I would say stop before your body does that, because once you surrender, it's actually about surrendering, going, okay, I can't do this anymore. I surrender, I am out. Then all of a sudden, miraculous and magical things start to happen in your life to support you, to show you that there is another way. You'll get, you know, somebody will come in and say, oh, that wall needs painting, I'll do that for you. Or, oh, look, here's this lovely little job. You can do it from home, just a day a week. But here's something you can do. Or my kids need a sitter, you know, in the afternoon. Maybe you could do that. Just forget about having to fulfill all those stupid societal expectations, which do nothing but damage to most of us. And live simply, so that you can surrender and let those miracles start happening, so that you can create a life that you really enjoy, because we only get one go as us. So let's enjoy it.
Oh, wonderful. I've got no words because you said it all. That's beautiful. Love that word surrender though. I love that.
I think we're forced to surrender when we burn out, aren't we? We're forced. Yeah.
Especially when it's that severe shutdown, definitely. But we, you know, certainly it's that body screaming that you need to slow down, stop, surrender. Lots of S words there. And it's in that space. Oh, another S word.
I love alliteration. Write them all down.
Yeah, I should remember it. But that space for those miracles, you said that do come. But often when we're in that push, we think that they won't be there or that there's no other way. But there are. We often just need all those steps, those S's.
They're waiting for us to stop, slow down, surrender.
Surrender space. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
My pleasure.
For sharing this
Lovely
story.
Lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. And welcome back anytime. Seriously.
Well, hopefully I won't overburn out again.
No, not for that, but sharing more of your wisdom that you have gained. Thank you so much, Edwina. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure, Shannon. Lovely to talk to you. And good luck with your book coming soon.
Thank you. I'm like, you can't see me, but I'm like, you know, I'm excited and also like, scared.
Well, let me know about the launch.
Oh, I will. You will be definitely on my list. Thank you, Edwina.
Love to be there. Okay. Bye. See you, sweetheart. Bye.
Thank you for listening to When Burnout Becomes Reality podcast. This pod relies on the power of its listeners to push it out to the four corners of the earth in hope that it reaches as many people in need as possible. So please like, share, follow, comment, or leave a review. Pay it forward, and I will be forever grateful. If you'd like to share your burnout to recovery experience, or you are an expert working in the burnout field and would like to share your wisdom on the pod, please email me at shannonswales@burnoutpsychologysupport.com. To keep up to date with episode releases, please follow us on your favourite podcast provider or by joining our mailing list at www.burnoutpsychologysupport.com. To check out the burnout psychology services on offer at Burnout Psychology Support, my telehealth practice, visit www.burnoutpsychologysupport.com/psychology services. Once again, thank you for listening and please take care of yourself. Bye for now.